And then like there's another kind of mini saga about my mom specifically wanting to talk to me like several times a day.
Oh, man. On the phone, like a phone call?
Phone call, even if it's just like a nothing burger
Oh man,
conversation, right?
Neil, she
Like
loves you so much. Her little Neil.
too much. It's too much.
Men don't talk, men don't talk. Men don't talk, men don't talk.
Hello, my name is Wesley Beckner, B as in boy. I made this podcast because I'm really bad at staying in touch with my friends. This week, I talked to a very good friend of mine, a very gentle soul, Neil Shaw. Neil and I have been friends since college. Neil sports a beard reminiscent of Martin Starr in Knocked Up, but his partner doesn't mind. Probably the beard is necessary for the wisdom he imparts, but it sure must tickle. Enjoy.
So, I want to talk about personal work and more global, and let's take that direction. So
That's good.
you and Nat, how did you guys meet?
We met in Austin, Texas. We met organically at a rooftop hookah bar called 77 Degrees. Nat was waiting for an engagement party to start for her friend, but it was at a club next door. And so she was just hanging out at 77, and I was there for a birthday party with some friends, and was with a group, and we had a hookah and like a, they have like these like seating arrangements, so we had like a group going,
You
and
know,
one, yeah,
sorry to interrupt.
no,
I'm terrible at this. You know that thing where you suck in the smoke and then you blow it straight into the other person's mouth? Did you guys do that?
no.
Wait, do you know what I'm talking about?
Is
It
that
was all the
like, yeah.
rage. I think it's called
I mean, I
shotgunning. I think it's, but I was
shotgunning.
just trying to, Heather and I were talking about this literally the other day. We could not remember. We'll have to fact check it. I think it's called shotgunning. It's not
I think
hotboxing.
no, hot boxing is like where you enclose, like you're in an enclosed
Yeah.
space, right? But no, we didn't do that, but I know what you're talking about. I don't know if it's called shotgunning or not. No,
Yeah, it was
but
my.
I did. She had never done hookah. So I like
Did
went
you?
over to talk to her, and I invited her to smoke hookah with us because I was like, well, we got a hookah. And she was by herself. So she was like, I'll try
Oh.
hookah. I've never done it. And then
Were you
she tried
like,
it and she didn't like it.
were you like the caterpillar in Alice in Wonderland?
Kind of, yeah.
You said, "Who are you?" I think he's my favorite character.
That's great.
Cheshire Cat's pretty good too. Yeah, hookah. That was a lot of fun in college.
Yeah. This was after college, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
Yeah.
you well, how long ago was it that you guys met? Like 7 years ago?
No, now it's 10. 10
Shit.
years. Yeah, it's been 10. We did the math on this the other day. 2016. No, sorry. 2017 is when we met. So sorry, it's been 9 years.
Why did you guys move to DC? So you were in Austin, now you're in
Good question.
DC. Yeah, it
Yeah.
feels so, because you are freelance developer, software developer. Nat does sort of massage therapy, right? Or a sub like a particular kind. She does, I know she does a lymph massage, lymphatic, right? Yeah.
That's right. Lymphatic, it's called lymphatic drainage or manual lymphatic drainage. Manual because it's with your hands versus like there are other lymph drainage techniques that involve bandaging and other things like that. Which is actually a more intense thing because you, well, first of all, Nat, a person like Nat couldn't do it because she's not a PT. You have to be like a PT or an OT and maybe a few other professions, but you have to have that before you can even start to get into the bandaging stuff. But Yeah, it's interesting. But manual lymph drainage falls more on the massage side, and it's a specialized modality. And she does that. She does oncology massage, and she does craniosacral as well, craniosacral therapy.
What are those?
Yeah, what are those? Oncology is anyone with undergoing cancer treatment.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, and those are, I think she really likes those, that type of work because it's very much, those people need it, and they don't
Okay.
necessarily always need, sometimes they need lymphatic work because they've undergone surgery or they just have like fluid buildup for various reasons, but oftentimes they just need touch, and it's a different kind of touch because they're so sensitive, their bodies are so sensitive, but there's it's huge like emotional component to the work.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
This was years ago, but I remember seeing a clip of a TED talk where a doctor was talking about like how he just had an anecdotal story about how a patient just really wanted to be touched and not treated like a specimen.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think there's, I mean, there is obviously like a stigma around undergoing, chemotherapy and stuff like that. But yeah, when you're in it, you kind of feel alienated and ostracized from everybody else. And you feel like people don't want to touch you. So I think that's where it comes from.
How is your work going?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, update on that. I am no longer a freelancer. I took a job opportunity,
Right.
accepted a job, with a startup. So I'm
Yes.
working for them now. They're it's called Pinpoint. Did I tell you about this?
We chatted about a little bit, but let's pretend we didn't. So
Okay.
tell me
Yeah.
about Pinpoint.
So Pinpoint, they do agentic social media management. So their claim to fame is, if you're a brand that lives on socials, gets a lot of like feedback and hype on social, you likely have like a team of social media managers and a lot of like personnel around that. So their Pinpoint's goal is to make the life of your social media management team easier and allow them to focus on like content creation and actual like facilitation of like working with influencers and stuff like that. So they want to offload like the actual moderations and engagements work off your plate and replace it with like an AI tool. I will say that one of the interesting things about it is they're not trying to be a chatbot. So they don't want people to just talk to, this brand AI endlessly or whatever. It's more of like, did something happen on social media that requires your attention? Can it be reasonably handled by an agent? If so, then we do that. We do that one thing, and then after that, it's like now it's your team's responsibility.
How do you like it so
It
far? How do
is.
you like your like the people you're working with?
They're good. I like it a lot. I think the work culture is it's very new. So the company's total of six people. So I'm sixth employee.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah.
My title is founding engineer. I'm the second engineer to join the team, and so there's like three people in engineering, the CTO, and then that's two founding engineers, and so it's a very very tiny team, but they do a lot. So it's like, it is fast paced as a startup. Things change all the time, it seems like. I've been there for about a month now, but the culture is very much like do what you can during the day, normal business hours, like, and then that's it. Like nobody's asking you to hit, specific deadlines on things. There hasn't been like They're very good at boundaries, I think, even with the product internally and even with customers. So like large enterprise customer asks for something, they will say no, like a reasonable amount of the time, or at least, put it on the roadmap and not like handle this right away. And it's cool because they're very transparent about like the financials and stuff. Like internally, we have like a channel that's called Make It Rain, and they just post the deals that get closed, and like there's at least one every day, and
Oh,
it's for
cool.
a significant amount, and it's kind of just like a hype thing, and everybody just kind of chimes in like, yo, let's go, like to the moon.
I was gonna ask, so you, like your company is building AI products. How do you use AI to develop? How is your developing methodology changed
Changed.
with AI tools? Like, are you using Claude Code, Codex? I did use Cursor in a year ago, and then I was like, I don't really want to be like, I was like, I'd rather, if I'm gonna pay for something, I want to pay for the model. I don't really care about, I want to build my own harness or whatever, build my own tools. And I'd rather have a predictable language model going through it and pay for that. So I switched to
That's
Claude
interesting.
Code. Yeah, I wasn't, so yeah, I'm curious what you use. I use them all, and I swap and try out different things, and work has both Claude and Codex. Are you writing code, or are you having the agent write code? How do you balance that?
Yeah, no, I'm glad you're taking it in this direction because this is like I have some recency bias about this because I just went through something where I kind of had like a realization. So to answer your first question, I use Claude Code. Specifically, I use Claude Desktop, and I've been using it for the last 6 months or so. So I was doing it while I was freelancing, and then I was using it at work as well for the last month. And what I came to realize is that so I switched to Claude Desktop because I switched just like you from Cursor to Claude Code. And I switched to Claude Desktop, I think mainly for the kind of the novelty of it and like trying to experiment with different modes or whatever. And I got hooked because I felt like the experience was much more pleasant. And I think maybe at that same time the models were, taking another leap, and I was satisfied with the output, and I didn't have to look at the code as much, and the code wasn't really the focus of that UI. And so I got hooked to that, and I think that has like now become something that works against me a little bit. Because the code isn't necessarily in front of me all the time, I look at it less, and because I look at it less, I don't catch things that I would have otherwise caught. And I think that that's become a little more clear to me after starting this job because I get more feedback with like the changes that I'm making and stuff. Like more so on like the code itself and like the decisions that are being made. And I'm, realizing a lot of those decisions I've outsourced to the agent, not necessarily because I wanted to, but because it did those things, and I didn't bother to take a second look at it. And I've kind of done it to myself because I took that surface away, right? That interaction is no longer happening by default. I have to opt into it. I have to say, yes, I do want to look at this piece of the code. And yeah, so anyway, I don't know if I answered all your questions.
You did.
We are supported by Quizly. It's not a test. Does your wife speak English as a second language? Has she told you your in-laws will never accept you as their son if you can't ask where the bathroom is, compliment the dinner, or unpack generational traumas in their native tongue? Well,
Get ready to become the number one in their eyes because Quizly's got you covered. Build flashcards with Quizly. Supports up to 6-sided cards, multiple choice and free text questions with level progression, match games to make it a bit more interesting, and reading passages with interactive translation. You can even practice your pronunciation with native speaker text-to-speech for every card. Use built-in decks or make your own for free at Quizly.me today.
Men don't talk, men don't talk, men.
How's Heather doing and how's the babies?
She's good. She's my little panda bear. Just likes to sleep and eat stuff and gets food cravings. So we go get it. And then we eat it. And then we sit on the couch and we play video games and we take naps. She used to never nap. I am a napper. Oh, really? So I feel like she's joined my world.
That's kind of nice, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's actually pretty pleasant. I mean, she's nauseous in and out, but she hasn't like thrown up. Yeah, it's cool. It was cool to see the sonogram and see that little guy moving around. It's sort of gnarly, to be honest, like the movie Alien.
Yeah. Wait, do you know if it's
we did a blood. We gave some blood on Thursday, so I guess we'll know soon. We'll find out and
exciting.
Probably come up with some names. Already decided it's going to be Junior, though. Junior.
Something Junior? Or that's the nickname?
That's the nickname's Junior. Junior.
That's cool. It could be like Boston or whatever, or it could be like Japanese.
Junya-san.
I was going to ask you about kids. Your parents were kind of bummed, right? Because you're an only child, and so they're not going to have the grandkids. How's that? Have they kind of accepted that, like, this is what you want for yourself? Or are they still kind of holding out?
So I'm going to walk back your premise just a bit because...
Oh, yeah, sorry.
No, it's okay. So it's okay because I think that's like, me and Nat spent a lot of time talking about this. So I know like with clarity what exactly the boundary is. And the boundary is Natalie does not want to birth another child.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so she does not want to become pregnant, go through pregnancy, and give birth.
Yeah.
So that is her boundary. And this was like, this was like the part of the premise of our relationship because she said, you know, I don't want to get married and I don't want to have any more kids. And so that was like how we started out. And whenever I told my parents about the relationship and they met Natalie and all that stuff, like she told them the same thing. And then of course a bunch of stuff happened or whatever. We can get into that if you want, but we have talked about since then the possibility of like adopting a child at some point. And so point being, like, it's not that depends on how you use the words having children or whatever, but that is the boundary. So it's not, you know, not to say that we couldn't adopt or I guess adoption would be the only option there,
Well, you could adopt. So, yeah. Well, I know. I appreciate that distinction. I think that's something that's, you know, as we get older and more adult and more mature and more evolved and more able to communicate how you worded it, like just being exacting about what actually is the boundary, I think is really useful. There's adopting. There's also like surrogacy.
All that's
expensive. Well, kids are expensive. Yeah,
your parents are, your parents are Indian. They were born in the U.S. or born in India?
They were born in India.
Yeah. I've noticed Heather's Chinese. Her parents are both, her dad still lives in China. Has a house in Lubbock of all places. But he lives back in China and her mom lives in Memphis, Tennessee. But her mom was very adamant, and I bring it up just to be, I think our parents' generation is very into having grandkids. I mean, but I think I've noticed it particularly strong with immigrants. My theory is like, typically to immigrate, you are a lot of the time thinking of your children, and you're trying to make a better life for your children. Immigrating is hard. Yeah. And so from their point of view, it can sometimes feel like that sense of legacy is really important, and seeing that carry on is really important. I think my dad would care less. He's got tons of grandkids. my mom, I think, is really excited. I didn't really get any direct pressure from her. But I noticed Heather's mom, one of the blessings of having the kids is like, finally stop hearing about, when are you having the baby?
Did that explicit like question comes up a lot?
Yeah, it came up a lot, I guess. It did. And like, so, you know, I'm trying to, I am learning Chinese. I take classes. One day I'll be able to talk like an eighth grader maybe. But I by and large don't pick up on this stuff, right? It's like Heather's mom is talking to her in Chinese. So it affects Heather. Yeah. It affects Heather a lot. And so it's nice that, you know, because first it was like, when are you going to get married? And then it was, when are you going to have the kids? Now we don't have that. But now it's, did you work on the car? Did you fix the car? And she'll hammer Heather with it. Yeah. So Heather drives her mom's old Toyota Prius, and we're going to get her a mom car. We're going to get Heather a mom car so she can stop using her mom's car.
Got it.
Right. And
that was very clear.
And then Neil, then Heather will finally have tranquility. Her mother won't bring up any topic over and over again.
It's gonna be something else.
Right? No, there's gonna be something else. That's what I'm I don't know what it'll be, the kid, right? It'll be whatever.
It'll be the something. Kid, yeah. Yes. When it gets close to time, she's gonna, you know, be very much like, you know, make sure that Heather's doing the right things, and then when you have the kid, it's going to be about taking care of the kid.
I wonder though, because like, Heather's mom loves Puffy, our cat. We all love Puffy. Everyone loves it. Puffy is the amazing. I like love him so much. If I had to choose between Heather and Puffy, I don't know, man. Puffy get into trouble.
Oh, you don't know.
I don't know, man. No, Puffy's great. And Heather's mom loves Puffy, and we love telling her about Puffy. So maybe that'll be what she's like with the kid, you know, just like super just love.
That'll be good.
And just want information.
That would be good, yeah.
You know, our relationships with our parents can improve and do improve.
Totally, yeah. I'm a big believer of boundaries and like, and like setting boundaries with your parents is like the most healthy and helpful thing to do as an adult, like if you don't already have them. I mean, like I'm still working on the boundaries with my parents too, but like the fact that Natalie and I are in a relationship and having to go through that whole thing with my parents. And then like there's another kind of mini saga about my mom specifically wanting to talk to me like several times a day.
On the phone, like a phone call?
Phone call. Even if it's just like nothing burger conversation, man,
Neil,
right? Like,
she loves you so much. Her little Neil.
Too much. It's too much. That's not good, you know.
No,
so like,
yeah.
But like, you know, now we're finally down to one time a day, but it's still gotta be at least once a day.
Oh man, you are a good son. I My mom asked me to call her once a week, and I do every other week.
Yeah.
But man, how does that feel about that? Does that sometimes like mom get out?
Oh yeah. Well, you know, she did give me feedback on that. Like, she's like, it's kind of weird that you talk to your mom like 3 times a day. And like, you know, like usually it was like once in the morning, once in the evening. And yeah, one of those conversations or both inevitably would be like, you know, hi, how's it going? Like, what are you doing? Just cooking dinner or whatever.
Uh-huh.
What'd you do today? Okay, blah, 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 blah. Okay, bye. Like, that was it. And nothing, like, substantial. And so, after talking with Matt about it, like, I already knew that it was, like, not great. But I didn't know how to deal with it, how to handle it.
Yeah.
And after talking with her, you know, kind of, I decided to bring it up. And I mean, every time I've set boundaries with my parents, whether it's about my relationship with Natalie or this, it's been very difficult and like emotionally charged. And it's never like, oh, okay, like I don't like what you're saying. I appreciate that you have a boundary. I'll respect it. Like, it's never like that. It's more like, how could you do this?
Yeah, man. That's hard.
Do you even care? and my mom, you know, my mom is like, oh, you do this, like you do this, and then eventually one day we'll never talk.
Yeah.
What are you saying right now? Like,
I was going to ask you, but sort of generally, have you ever, like, the way your parents wanted to have grandchildren, that strong desire for something, have you felt that about anything? Like, I want this in my life, because I don't know if I have, man. Like, I just don't. When I was in high school and college in my 20s, I was into sex, drugs, and EDM, and it was so much fun, and I just wanted more of that, but it was never enough. And now I'm not doing any of that anymore, and I'm like, I don't really want, I don't want anything that much, because it's like, nothing I've ever wanted and gotten was that great once I got it. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, it's the wanting that.
Yeah. And so, like, I'm excited to be a dad. I love being a puffy dad, and because I like to give them spaces and see them explore it and use it and have fun. And I want to, I think I'm excited to do that for a human. But I really, I don't know.
You're gonna be a great dad, dude.
Oh, thanks, man. Life is just hard. I'm looking for just making sure I stay somewhat centered, that I can get sleep, that I don't feel like I'm losing my mind, don't get caught up. I want to say meditate, but it's not quite that. Like, I do try to be mindful and have some practices around that, but it's more like, can I just make sure I don't get caught up in whatever it is, XYZ, you know, like work this past week with the red alert and being on call. Can I make sure I don't get in my head, that I don't think everyone's judging me for this, that I'm saying something stupid right now in front of all these people? Can I just like let go of that? Can I not get all up in that right now? That's what I'm, you know, what's most important to me is just making sure I feel that groove and don't get caught up in stuff, because that's what's really uncomfortable, is getting caught up in those your self-told stories that are really critical and fearful and anxiety ridden. And so I'm just trying to do what I can to be aware when that's about to happen, or when it is happening, or when it has happened, so I can smooth it. Do you have any desires?
No, you're good. I feel like I'm kind of in the same boat as you. And I think that, like, one thing that I've been curious about, I wouldn't say it's like a strong desire or anything, but like, I do think that there is, well, there's, it is almost obvious that having a kid, like, actually when your little human is born, your life is going, you are going to feel things that you haven't felt.
Yeah.
Right? Like, something about you is going to change, and it's not just psychological, it's also like physiological, and like there are things that are going to happen in your body that will affect your mind and the way you think about things just because you have this little human to take care of. And it's not, you know, it's not we can approximate it with like pets and stuff, but it's, yeah, there's nothing else like it.
Yeah.
And even the fact that, you know, our parents or whoever wants grandchildren, that desire, even though part of it is selfish, I think it doesn't exist without the fact that they have a child, mm-hmm. right? Like nobody without children is going to be like, oh, I want grandchildren.
Yeah.
Like it's because you have a child. And the other part of it is you want your children to have children, because who's going to take care of your child when you're gone?
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. that full circle kind of thing. Yeah. there's legacy stuff to it too. There's so many factors to it, but like, I do think like, it's so ingrained in our biology for those things to happen that there are whatever chemicals, hormones, things, processes that happen in our bodies that reinforce it.
Yeah. Yeah. The biology. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And yeah, so I've been like, I've been curious about that. Especially in, you know, the conversations I've had with my parents and then with like other family about not having kids.
Yeah.
The desire question, I think like, I think I'm kind of with you with having a desire to be at peace. But I think like there's like a meta desire there, which is kind of like trying a desire to like kind of drop your ego and like not have to worry about yourself.
Yeah. There's really something I have not done yet that I'm expecting to happen as part of the having a kid change, is like really selflessly care about someone else. Instead of being so like focused on my own happiness or trying to get what I want or achieve, try to be there for someone else.
I think you will be good at that because you have this I can't think of another word, but predisposition for kind of being at peace, because you know that you're working on yourself already. And I feel like just doing that, you created some space for like other people. But sometimes people have kids and they haven't done that. They don't have space for someone else, and then they have to take care of them. So then they end up like, you know, it spills over onto the child, whatever their insecurities and problems and trauma are. And that, I think we'll all do, you know, that'll happen for everyone. But
what you're making me think of is reactiveness or reactivity. You know, if you're all reactivity, your karma, dharma, ego, all it just spills into the kid, and it's like not fair to them. In order to undo that, you need to be a blank canvas at times. I think that our generation will be much less reactive than our parents were, and much more present. I love my parents, and I don't have, I think I had a great childhood. Me and my sister, we're both very independent. We don't really like want to lean on a partner, and really don't. We're avoidant attachment style versus the other one is anxious attachment style. So Heather and I are polar opposite. She's anxious, I'm avoidant. And it was really tough in the first 2-3 years. It wasn't really until we like bought the house, got engaged, and we were like very obvious signals we were in, focused on being in it. And then it sort of the waters smoothed, but it was really hard the first few years. There are happily married people. I think you do learn a lot by being in a couple, committed for a long time. And I think, yeah,
definitely true.
Yeah. There's so many things you couldn't really learn if you were just by yourself, like how insufferable we each are.
Yeah, I think it's a tough life being by yourself because you're in an echo chamber.
Yeah.
And I mean, you definitely need to be with other humans in general, as we are social animals, but having a partner, I don't know. I actually don't know like what the biological imperative is, if there is one, for like having a partner beyond procreation.
But, right.
But I do. There's probably something there. But like, I think it's important. I think you, and it's not necessarily that, you know, I think dating is like evolutionary as well, and like going through different relationships. I think I'm anxious and not as avoidant.
Yeah, I could see that. Like if I were to pick one for each of you, that'd probably be the map I'd choose.
Are those the only two options?
Yep, those are the two. It's just a scale.
Oh, okay, like degrees.
Yeah, sorry. I mean, it's just those two. And then there's healthy attachment, which is a balance of both, right? So you want to go towards the center. I think most of the best philosophies are just one scale, you know, two directions. Because the other one I really like is that I love as a concept is character disorder versus neuroses. Not dissimilar. So it's basically you're on the scale either bent towards character disorder or through neuroses. neurotic people, they tend to, it all has to do with, I love it because that also, also the other scale is internal, external, nurture, nature. Basically it's like people who are neurotic take on too much responsibility. They say, this is my fault, when in fact, like it doesn't need to be. It's not necessarily their fault. They think it's their fault that this happened. Character disorder people are the opposite. They think everything is everyone else's fault. It's never their fault.
I've heard this, but I heard it called the locus of control. Is that related?
That sounds related. I don't think I've heard it said that way, but I think that sounds like what we're talking about here. Yeah. Locus of control. Yeah.
Yes. It's exactly what you're saying. Like, is everything happening because of me and my actions, or is everything happening to me?
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, I love it because, you know, I tend to bleed towards neuroses. I think I get in my head anxious, like, oh man, what did I do here? How did I fuck up? The other thing that these things map to is when your trauma happened in life, like character disorder people, like, I mean, what if you bend too far in either direction, the character disorder, usually something very awful happened to them. I forget the details of this, but I think it's something like the trauma that would have created the character disorder happens like before 5 years old and it's intense. The neurotic trauma would have happened between like 5 and 10. This sounds fringe. I don't remember exactly how that thing, but I like it because I fucking hate character disorder people. So I'm like, oh yeah, those people got really fucked up. They're so insufferable, man. They're just so annoying. They're like so hard to deal with. The ones that are like, it's never their fault. I love my my neurotic people.
Yeah, I'm definitely more neuroses. Yeah, neurotic. Same. But like, you know, sometimes I wonder, like, what trauma did I go through? You know, like, your parents got divorced. I mean, that's very traumatic.
It's tough, man. I like It's, I don't know. I don't know. It's hard to say what trauma is, even. Like, I was 10, I was pretty old. And like, I remember at the time thinking, some people are going to ask me about this. I'm all, or I'm like, this is not a big deal. Like, I feel fine. I remember thinking that, and I don't know. But yeah, you're like, you're so, does anything, you don't have to talk about your traumas. But yeah, interesting to hear that you haven't even like, haven't felt like there was something that happened. I don't know. It's very, sometimes it's
I mean,
very.
is the absence of a trauma the trauma in and of itself? Your trauma is that life was too good, and now you think it's always going to have to be that way, and that's your cross to bear.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, whenever I think of like, oh, what, you know, what trauma did I experience? All I think of is like I remember my dad having a little bit of a temper, but it wasn't like it wasn't out of control, and it wasn't ever like maybe I'm rationalizing it right now, but yeah, like to me, it doesn't seem that crazy. So, yeah, I sometimes wonder like where does my craziness come from?
I'm
Maybe it's
sure,
purely
like,
genetic.
yeah, I think I'll have more opinions on it when I'm a parent myself. Like, maybe I'll be like, oh, I don't know if my dad does, but I, yeah, dude, I'm just, I like my parent. My dad built tree houses with me and all sorts of things in the yard, and mom was always there for the emotional part. And I mean, maybe that in and of itself says something. Like, I don't, I, father was not there emotionally, but he was physically there, and he was, you know, taught, teaching me how to play chess and how to use tools. And so maybe our generation will be the more emotionally present fathers.
And there'll be different trauma.
Do you think that Jeffrey Epstein hung himself?
Oh, I don't think so. I'm pretty sure on that one. It's not just a yeah, he didn't do it. He may have been hung. I would say that chances are at least he was coerced heavily. I'm also like open to do this again, like and focus on that part of it
Oh yeah,
if I
let's
want.
do it. Yeah. Be a repeat visitor of the podcast. Yes, I love it.
Yeah, I mean,
We'd
it
love to
doesn't
have
happen
you.
anytime
We'd love to
soon.
have you. No, we'll do it again.
Come on down.
Yeah, this is
Well, yeah,
harder this
man.
week, but yeah, let's do
I
it.
got you.
It was good talking to you, man. And now I have a recording and notes, so I
Same.
won't forget these details about your life and your relationships.
Oh boy. Now you know everything.
I know everything.
Yeah,
It was good talking, man. Say hi
was
to
good
Nat,
stuff,
and
man.
I'll talk to you again soon.
I will. Yes, and give our love to Heather, Puffy, and the new form of life.
Thanks, man. Will do. All right. Talk to you later, buddy. Bye.
Later, man.